Welcome to Flip the Score. I'm Alex.
I'm Andrew.
I'm Josh.
And I couldn't get this motherfucker to start recording for the life of me.
Right when I played the cricket noise.
That was perfect. Tonight we are going to talk about... I don't know. I haven't really been paying attention to some stuff.
A lot of stuff.
Marvel Arrival. Yeah. We're going to talk about some Final Fantasy, of course. But before we do that, let's talk about video games. Josh, it's your time to shine on this Good Friday. The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. Take it away.
What? I'm not really sure what he's taking tonight. Maybe
fucking
me.
LSD, bro.
But I have, I've been playing a ton of Dragon's Dogma 2.
Really?
And I think Andrew has been doing the same.
Yes.
But then before I get into Dragon's Dogma 2 real quick, I did play through the entire single player portion of the Tomb Raider 2013 reboot on PS3. Because I was looking at my trophies and I saw there's a ton of trophies I never got on the PS3 version. So I played through that.
Tomb Raider
3? It's about like 12 hours ish to 100% the campaign. So I did that. Had a lot of fun. It's still like one of my most favorite games of all time. Love that game.
And which Tomb Raider is this?
That's the one that came out in 2013, the first of the reboot trilogy.
Okay, 2013.
Okay. So, now for Dragon's Dogma 2.
Okay, let's hear it.
So I never played the first one.
Yes, you did.
Did I?
We both played it back in 2012. Because we got it on 360.
Okay, well, if I did play it, I certainly didn't play a whole lot of it.
I remember playing it with you. I mean, not like it was co-op or anything, but I remember us both playing it. Because it was back when we used to talk a lot with, like, Colton Dan back in the day. But we played a lot of, I mean, not a lot, but we played it. Obviously it's 12 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, those are some memories that have apparently been put in my mind palace that I do not have access to. But I playing a bunch of the second one. It just came out last Friday. I was over at Andrew's on Sunday, and he showed me the game. I'm like, yeah, this looks something I could fuck with. So I bought it, and... So it takes place in this fantasy world. Do you know what the world is called, Andrew?
I don't.
Okay, I'm not sure if they really say, like, what the land is called. But you play as a character who is called the Arisen. And in this game's lore is that when you are Arisen, you're destined to be king, basically. And someone who's Arisen is, from what I gather, is they get, like, a dragon, like, takes their heart. And then somehow, they're revived after having their heart taken away by a dragon.
Something like that, and there can only be one Arisen at a time.
Yeah, and then the Arisen has, like a scar, a vertical scar in the middle of their chest. Like, they just had fucking open heart. So your character's in the Arisen, like I said, they're destined to be king. The current, I don't think he's king yet, but there is an Arisen who is in the capital of this game world, and he is claiming to be the Arisen. And so the gist of the story so far is, you're kind of palling up with the captain of the guard of this capital city. His name is Captain Brand, and he knows that your character is a true Arisen, and he wants to reveal. He wants to, like, you know, like, I'm trying to think of the right word, but he wants to reveal that this Arisen, this fake Arisen, is fake, and so there's a bunch of quests that you're going through to try to do that. Then, like, the gameplay is third person, kind of just action gameplay. There's a bunch of different, I guess, ways to play the game. And in the game, they're called vocations. And right now, I'm what's called the fighter's vocation.
It'd be like your classes. So, like, fighter, mage, archer, yeah, like that.
So, the fighter class is you have a sword and a shield, and then you can unlock different special moves that you can assign to two buttons on the controller, or if you're playing on PC, assign a different, I'm guessing, different key commands. And you can go to a guild hall in major cities and small towns, and you can change your vocation. So, for example, if I wanted to, I could change my vocation from the fighter to an archer. I could use a bow and arrow, or I could change to a mage and use a staff and use magic and stuff. I haven't done any of that yet. I'm still just playing as a fighter because I want to rank that vocation up before I go to a different vocation. And then one special thing that Arisen can do as well is they can command what are called pawns. And pawns are pretty much, I guess they're human beings in the game. Like, they kind of have magical properties about them. Like they're able to go from realm to realm, from unit, like, reality to reality, and I guess, like, help different Arisen. But you can have your own pawn, one that you create yourself, and they can be their own vocation. I have an archer pawn, and then you can have up to two additional pawns that you did not create who can help you out. And the pawn you created can level up with you. For example, I am level 19. My pawn is level 19. And then the two other pawns that you have, they do not level up with you. So, for example, I have a pawn who's level 13. And I have a pawn who's level 17. I probably need to switch out 13 pawn pretty soon. And then you do that by, there's these, I think they're called Rift Stones.
Yeah.
And they're in major cities, or you can also sometimes find them out in the wilderness. And when you go to these Rift Stones, it kind of opens up like a portal in-game that your character goes into. And then you see a bunch of pawns around you. And you can select from a bunch of pawns that are around you. And then you can look at them, look at their stats, look and see what their vocations are. And then you can pay to hire them. And there's a currency that you have to hire pawns with. It's called RC. I have no idea what this stands for. Do you know, Andrew?
Rift coins.
Okay. So these Rift coins you can use to hire pawns. Sometimes when you encounter pawns in the wild, you just see them like walking around, and you can go up to them. Sometimes they actually don't cost money. And then sometimes they
do. So any pawns that are the same level as you or below do not cost money. Any pawns that are higher level cost money. And any pawns of friends, no matter what level they are, do not cost money.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, anything else, Andrew, that about the basics of the game that you think that we should go over?
I mean, like Josh said, it's combat's very hack and slash, depending on what class you are. I guess it'd be more ranged if you're an archer or a mage. You definitely want to spread out your party. So, like, if you're, like, a fighter, then you would want to have, like, an archer and also, like, a mage or a maybe a warrior with you, because a mage will heal you as you're fighting. If you don't have a mage with you, you're kind of fucked. And then there's smaller enemies when you're running around. That you attack, like, goblins and orcs or whatnot, and then there's your really big enemies, like your cyclops or your werewolves or shit like that take a bit more to bring down. But each vocation has their special moves that you buy, and you can access those by, like, if you hold left bumper, each one of your face buttons gives you a special move that you can use to expend stamina. It's very big on running around, as in there's fast travel in the game, but it's not, the game is not designed around fast travel. You have to use these what the fuck are they
called? They're called fairy stones.
Yeah, exactly. You use these fairy stones to fast travel. But I'm like 15 hours in the game. I've only found two.
Really?
So I, yeah. Like, have you found more?
I have like I've used three of them, and I have eight of them in my.
Oh damn! Yeah, I've only found two of them. So,
there's been times where my one of my pawns are like, "Hey, I found this," and they give me a fairy stone. Like, where the fuck did you find this?
Oh, nice, good for you. I wish my pawns helped me like that.
And then so there's been times where I've gotten them for like as a quest reward, and then there you can also buy them from shopkeeps. They're like. Sometimes they're like 5 to 10,000.
Yeah, they're expensive though.
Well, from what I can tell, like that's not super expensive compared to some other items, because one thing that I'm finding out as I play the game is that if you get something like a piece of clothing or something, that you should really think twice before you sell it. And if you sell it, really make sure it's something that you don't need, because I sold a it's like it was like these fancy set of pants, and then there's a guy in there's a town called Checkpoint. I don't remember what the town's called. It's like Checkpoint Town or something. And there's a guy there. He's a forger, but he also sells. He also just sells items. I guess kind of like, not really. I guess kind of like a secondhand store. And it's not like a pawn shop or anything, but you can sell items to him. But if you sell items to other shopkeeps, and if it's like an important item, that guy will end up getting the item, and then you can go to him and you can rebuy what you sold. But that pair of pants I sold for like, I don't know, maybe like 1,000 gold, and it's 300,000 gold to buy him back.
Yeah, but it's because they're the like the rich people's clothing, and there's a quest actually where I don't know if you did it yet, but you actually have to put on those clothes to do the quest. And I had found two pairs of those clothes, and I sold them. And I was like, shit, what if I can't find another pair? And my buddies were like, there's a non-zero chance that you just fucked yourself. But I ran around like the rich area of the town, and I was able to find another pair of clothes. So I keep those in my storage all times now in case I need them later.
Well, yeah, and that's what I did too, because I kind of Googled like, where can I get these clothes? I'm not paying this guy 300,000 gold to get that pair of pants back. But I was able to find some more rich people clothing. I went to J. Crew and I got some clothes.
Mm-hmm.
So is there anything you don't like about this game, Major?
The performance, Alex, I want to tell you that this is not an exaggeration when this might be the most poorly optimized game I've ever played in my life.
Now, are you guys playing it on PC or PS5?
I'm playing it on PC. Josh is on a PS5.
Josh, are you having performance issues?
So, there are some performance issues on PS5. I don't think they're as glaring as they are on PC, because that's with so PS5, weird. With PS5, they developed a game for it using a baseline that, you know, everybody playing PS5 has the same specs.
Right.
So I think with PC, it's a little bit more glaring. But I will say with PS5, some of the pop-in, it can be pretty bad at times. To where, like, if you're running around town and, like, There's been times where I'm running around town and I will like suddenly like dodge away, like I'm running into somebody and my character will like kind of like move to the side, get around somebody, but no one's there until I move past them, and then suddenly they pop in there. Or there's been times where I'm out in the wilderness, like not in the wilderness, I'm on a main road, and I'm running, and suddenly my character just stops. I could run in something, and then an ox cart just pops in.
Oh shit!
So there's definitely some pretty bad popping at times. Those don't happen very often, though. Most of the time, like NPCs are loaded in, and that doesn't happen. And most of the time, like objects are loaded in, so I can see them before I run into them. But it has happened before, though, to me.
Yeah, there's just no reason why on a PC. I mean, I got a 4060 Ti. I have a pretty good processor. And with DLSS on performance, or not performance, on balance, there's no reason why, like, when I'm out in, like, the world, in the countryside, it's fine. I get, like, 60 to, like, 90 frames. But when I'm in town, it falls, and it'll dip down in the 30s. It'll be, like, between 30 and 60. And it just, like, continually fluctuates between there. And it's pretty bad performance. And it's all CPU issues. Like, it doesn't even really matter what graphics card you have. It just, the game is so CPU-bound because it has so many NPCs walking around doing stuff. It's the same issue that Bethesda has. Like, with Starfield, for example, it didn't matter how strong the Series X was. It all stands on the processor because the game remembers everything that you do, everything that you store, what all the NPCs are doing. So it's very CPU-heavy, which is the same as what Dragon's Dogma is. So they need to do some more optimizing to really... I think this game would have really benefited for another 6 months in the oven. But they really wanted to get it out before the end of March for the fiscal year. Which, that's what games are now. Get them out, and then we'll fix them and throw out patches later. Yep. So
some of the things that I don't like about the game is that I don't like how sometimes how obtuse the game is. To where
That's by design, though.
Well, and I understand it's by design, but it's like, if I'm doing a quest, like, for example, there's different kind of quests in the game, to where you have, like, your main quest and you have side quests. But there's also quests that are timed, to where if you get one of these quests, there's a little, like a time, like a, what do you call those?
Like an hourglass.
Thing? Yeah, an hourglass. There's an hourglass on the quest in the quest page. And it lets you know, like, this quest is timed. Like, if you don't do this quest within a set amount of time, it doesn't tell you how long. But if you don't do this quest in a set amount of time, then you'll fail the quest. So, I was doing this quest. This boy got dragged off by wolves. And you had to go find where the wolves took him. So, I interviewed some people in town. And they're like, you know, this boy likes to go to this place here. So I went to it. It's like this graveyard place, but it's not creepy like a graveyard. They just have any graves there, and then it's like, well, I like the quest marker went away, and there's nothing. It doesn't tell you where to go. And I'm like, well, what the fuck? And so I spent like 20 minutes looking for where to go, and I couldn't figure it out. So I'm like, all right, well, you know, obviously Google's my best friend. So I went to Google and I searched it, and I came up, I walked through the quest, and it's like, oh, after you get to this marker, or after you get to the spot, the quest marker does go away. But if you paid attention to what the townsfolk said, that he liked to collect these special kinds of flowers, and so when he got dragged away by the wolves, some of these flowers got laid out in the ground, and you have to follow this trail of flowers to where, which is like half a mile away in the game. And it's like, oh, you have to follow these trails of flowers.
That's not how I did it. Like, you can talk to someone in the town there that tells you exactly where the cave is. And then the cave just showed up. The quest marker went to the cave, so I just
I wish I would have fucking known that.
Yeah.
But
for me, though, I waited to, because I was like, I don't give a shit about this kid. So I just went and did a bunch of other shit, and then I went and did the quest later, and that's when you go in the cave and you just find his shirt, because he was killed already, and I was like, whatever, I don't give a shit.
So I saved him, and he was still alive, but what was annoying, really? Yeah, what was annoying is that when you get him, he goes, please help me back to town, which is 5 miles away.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my god. And so I have to lure this kid back to town. Well, not lure him, that sounds bad. But I have to escort this kid back to town. And he runs, but he does like a kid run, to where he can only run half as... He can't run as fast as you run, so you have to jog. And so halfway back to town, I ran into a fucking ogre. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. So I had to fight an ogre, making sure he didn't attack the kid. And then I finally got this kid back to town, and his grandfather was like, hey, thanks for saving my grandson. So
that's funny. One quick thing I'll say about my gameplay before we move on. Alex, you do not want to be caught out in nighttime in this game. Because nighttime is actually nighttime. It's not like, oh, here's a blue sky at night to like where you, like it is pitch black and you cannot see shit if you don't have a light.
This is SpongeBob going, this isn't darkness. This is advanced darkness.
Yeah, And so I was on my way to a the next town in like the desert, and I forgot also when you're traveling you find these like campsites. And if you camp there, you can like sleep there and it'll make it morning. But you have to have like a camp thing on you. And I forgot to put one. I normally don't carry too many of them because they're heavy and they weigh you down. And so I forgot to give one to one of my pawns or carry one on myself. So it got to nighttime and I was like, shit, I'm halfway there. So either I can run back to the town I was before, or just try and make it to where I'm trying to go. But there's so many monsters that were coming out of the woodwork at night to kill me. And, like, there was a stone golem. There's this fucking, like, ghost thing that came out of nowhere to attack me while I was fighting the stone golem. Then these, like, fucking lizard folk came out of nowhere and started fighting me. It got to one point where I was like, fuck this. And I started running, and all my pawns, like, were stuck back there, and they all died as I'm running toward the next town. And I'm like, oh, my God, I need to get out of here. And these things are just fucking chasing me all the way to the next town. And I arrived there with, like, hardly any health. And I bring all these monsters inside the town, and all the, like, town folk have to start, like, fighting these things. And I'm like, help me, get me out of here. It's fucking hilarious. All because I forgot to carry a pack of a fucking campsite. But yeah, that's just one of those things that can happen in this game. Like, you really want to, like, plan, like, what you're going to do or whatever.
Also, like, if you come across enemies and you run away, like, they will chase you. And, yeah. And, like, if you're not careful, like, they will chase you really fucking far.
Yep.
Now, a good strategy for me that I've found, though, is that if there's any bridges around you, like rope bridges or something, you can cross the rope bridge, and then as the enemy is crossing it, you can cut down the bridge and they'll fall down, and that's a good way to get away from them.
Mm-hmm. This game must take place in Arkansas, because they will chase you.
Yeah, they will chase you, they will catch yep. you. And... So I guess real quick, the other things I don't like about the game, we kind of touched on the lack of fast travel. So Alex, there's a in major cities there's this thing called port crystals, and you have to go activate it. And then when you're out in the wild, and you can use a fairy stone, and you can fast travel to any port crystal that you've activated. But again, port crystals they're really rare. Like, you can find them in towns in major cities, but there's not that many. These I've only found two. And then...
Well, you also get some, like, personal ones that you can set anywhere. Similar, like, Alex in Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, how you get the things that you can put on the map and you can just warp to that point anytime.
Oh, okay.
And that is true, but also, like, I've read that there's not that many personal crystals in the game.
There's 10 of them, and then okay. plus actually 11 if you want to buy the one from the store.
Okay. And then the other thing is that I don't like how quests and enemies do not have levels. I don't like that, because for example, if I get a quest and like I would like to know how difficult the quest is going to be. Like, should I be level 20 for this quest? Should I be level 30 for this quest? So I don't like that. And I also don't like how enemies don't have levels. Like, if I come up on I fought a stone golem, and I beat it, but incredibly difficult, and I'm like...
I think they might scale with you, though. I don't think there are enemy levels.
Well, maybe, but I mean, I've read where some people have gone into the area and they found enemies that are like really tough, and like it, like for example, said they went and they found goblins that are like really armored up, and like definitely higher level than what the goblins they were facing, but there's no like the enemies don't have levels, so
maybe.
So yeah, I mean, other than that, like, I really do, I like the world building and the narrative gives. And then I do praise the characters and the graphics. Like I think the game just is really cool. And like the RE engine that he uses, it's clearly just a really good malleable engine. I mean, they use it for Resident Evil, and then they use it for Liss.
I suppose, but I think that with the performance issues that this game has, I think it's clearly showing that they're stretching this engine to its limits, and it's doing things that this engine was not created to do.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I would say that this game is a cross between Witcher 3, God of War with combat, and I think some of the humor is very Fable-ish. It's not as whimsical as Fable, but it's like almost there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm quite enjoying it.
Awesome. I'm not really sure if this game is for me. Everybody, it seems like across the gaming landscape, a lot of people just have differing opinions, but it just seems like it's a really fun time. This might be one of those games where I just watch people play instead of actually play it. Kind of like Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah.
Just wasn't my game, but everything else, you know, style to it, story, it hit for me, but the rest of it was just, it just wasn't. And that's awesome. I'm glad you guys are digging it. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about Dragon's Dogma 2 before we move on?
Anything else you want to talk about, Josh? I got a couple other games.
Not with Dragon's Dogma 2, but I do just want to mention real quick how crazy I think it is in the past year and what we're going to get in the upcoming year for fantasy games. Because, I mean, last year we got Final Fantasy 7. Final Fantasy 16. We had Baldur's Gate 3. We just got Dragon Dogma 2. We're getting most likely Dragon Age, the new Dragon Age this year, and then we got Avowed coming out this year. It's like it's for games in the fantasy, like medieval type setting. Like it's been crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else you've been playing, Josh?
Nope.
So for me, as much fun as I've been having with Dragon's Dogma 2, and I have been having fun, actually, a few of my friends have already beaten it, and apparently there's a pretty cool end game with it.
How long did it take them to beat it?
I mean, they did it pretty fast, so I want to say maybe 30, 40, well, a lot of them fast-tracked it, though. But I think they haven't told me what the end game is, because it is, I guess, kind of spoilery. But I think that it kind of, like, it wants you to, like, do the game again as, like, the same character. Maybe things are different. I'm not sure. Because the level cap is 999. So, obviously, I'm, like, level 25 right now. So it does take quite a while to level up. But I'm putting Dragon's Dogma 2 officially on the back burner for now until they release some performance patches. Because playing it on PC, honestly, when I'm playing it for a while, my eyes actually start hurting from like all the frame rate changes. And so I'm putting that on the back burner. I bought PlayStation's having their spring sale right now, and I bought the Red Dead Redemption remaster. That came out last year. Yeah, and I bought it because I was like, you know what? It has that 60 frame patch on it. And I started playing it. Holy shit. Like, this game, obviously, this game came out in 2012. Is that right?
No, it came out in 2010.
Are you... Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think you're right. Okay. So 2010.
It came out in it was spring of 2010. So it's been been like 14 years.
Yeah. So this game came out in spring of 2010, and this game, the up-res they did to it, just whatever they did going into it, actually like making it look better. It looks fucking fantastic. It's obviously not in the levels of Red Dead 2, but I actually like the graphics on this one better than Red Dead 2. Because I think like the artistic direction really, to me, brings out like the what in my mind like the Wild West is more than what Red Dead 2 does. The only thing that still isn't great are the cutscenes, because it's like the cutscenes are I guess they run at a better resolution, the cutscenes, but they still look like the cutscenes from like the 2010 version, because they didn't go in and spruce up the models or anything, because they're just all videos, I guess. But when you're actually playing the game, it looks really good. And having it run at 60 frames, it is actually like playing this game for new, like for the first time all over again. And god damn, like I just fucking love playing as fucking John Marston. He's just so fun to play as, like. But yeah, I'm really enjoying that. And then the other thing is, I played the Stellar Blade demo today.
Awesome. Give me your.
And let me tell you guys something. This, just playing the demo, this is my front runner for Game of the Year.
Ooh, that's what I want to hear, dude. I have been like itching to try this game.
Like, Andrew, just be honest. It's just because of the jiggle physics, right?
And that's okay. We are jiggle physics fans. Yeah, out listen, here, boys.
Artistic direction is a huge part of Game of the Year. I mean, come on. but Josh, I can't wait for you to come over tomorrow, because I'm gonna play you just the beginning of this demo, and this is one of the best looking games I've played on my OLED TV. This thing fucking pops off the TV. The gameplay is so good. So, something that's been hard to tell from the previews they've done, from the videos they put out, is this a Souls game? Yes, this is a Souls game. And there was kind of, you didn't really know that from some of the videos, because a lot of this was like, oh, is this like a Bayonetta-like game? Is this more like a Dark Souls game? I will say, like, the hack and slash stuff is very Bayonetta. Well, maybe not as fast-paced as Bayonetta, because Bayonetta is, like, doing all these flips and stuff. But it's definitely a lot faster than Souls games. But other than that, the gameplay is Souls. So it's a lot of parrying, it's a lot of dodging. You have your rest zones, which is just like a chair and like a vending machine, which you get your skills from. And when you rest there, all your enemies respawn, just like a Souls game. But the difference is, which is I think what might actually get you guys to play this, there's an easy mode.
Okay.
Nothing done, and not even like, oh, fuck yeah, not even like, oh, finally. Like, it's the first Soul game I've seen to where they're like, no, 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 we want casuals to be able to play this as well as hardcore Souls game players. And so I was playing on easy just to see what it was like in a demo. And I'll say that, is it easier? Yes. That doesn't mean that you just go in there and hack and slash, and you're like, I don't even need to try. It's like, no, you still need to watch what you're doing. You still need to try and parry. The parrying is easier in the easy mode than it is in the hard mode. So each enemy, not like the really small enemies, but each like medium and bigger size enemy, you see a underneath their health bar, you see these like yellow circles. And every time you parry, one of those yellow circles goes away. And once you get, so say they have like three circles. Once you parry three times, it opens them up and you hit triangle and do like a huge like special move on them, which most of the time will kill them. If not, if they're stronger, then it'll take like a big chunk of their health bar away. So I think that this is insanely playable on easy mode. And then obviously if you're a veteran of Souls games and you just play on the standard normal difficulty. But this thing has Nier Automata vibes all fucking over it, with the music, with how Eve looks like, with the story going on. And I'm just, like, already in love with this game. I'm like, I cannot wait for the end of April to come so I can fully play this game. But yeah. So, also, just even without the OLED, this game is so fucking gorgeous. And it's one of those games, I think, because it's only on PS5 and they can really optimize it for it, it actually has like the three modes on it. So it has your graphics mode, the performance mode, and it has a balance mode, which so obviously graphics mode does just a straight 4K 30 frames. Performance does 1440p at 60 frames, and balance does a somewhere in the middle to where it it upscales it. It'll do, like, it'll try and hit 4K, but it's like a resolution that like dips or goes up depending on what you're doing, and it still tries to maintain that 60 frames. So I actually think balance mode is the way to go. And if you're playing on a VR or TV, it'll just like smooth everything out anyway. So, but yeah, I'm over the moon at how this game feels. So,
hell yeah.
So yeah, super excited.
Anything else, Andrew?
I think that's all I've been playing.
Okay.
So Alex, I've seen you on Final Fantasy a lot, so
yeah.
How's that going?
It's going okay. I'm starting to find some of these mini games to be kind of tedious, and I kind of just want to get through those parts to get to the story. Right now, I'm at the Golden Saucer, and I have to face these guys in Queen's Blood, and they got some pretty powerful decks. And I'm kind of just, you know, I'll play a couple more.
You think decks or dicks?
I've heard it both ways. it could be my dick on your dick. Anyways, so basically, I'm at a point where I kind of just want to get through some of these mini games and start actually playing more of the story. The side content is really fun, but I like the story a lot. Kind of finding out who the hooded people are got me really, really interested. And then,
so you fully know who they are now?
Yes. Yeah. Did you get to there?
Nice. No, I'm not there yet.
Yeah, you kind of, they mention it, and then it like all clicks. Like, oh, I see what's going on.
Yeah, I haven't been playing since Dragon's Dogma 2 came out, so I'm still in the second main area. So,
I'm gonna keep doing it. I'll show you through this area, and then I can get on to where I'm going. I've played a couple matches of Helldivers 2. Just going in there, getting some levels, getting some kills, having some fun. I do that like once every other day. And I have put a few hours into MLB The Show 24. That released on, I believe,
been like a week and a half,
I think. About a week and a half. I've been playing it on Game Pass on Xbox Series S. It's pretty fun. I've been doing the Diamond Dynasty a little bit more, because I got a ton of packs. I got a ton of really good cards. I pulled a Diamond Bryce Harper, so I got a pretty decent lineup.
Nice.
I'm very bad at this game online. Holy shit, I can't hit the ball. My only run came on a bunt in extra innings, and it was stupid. but it plays really well. I want to try out some of the Derek Jeter and the Negro League stuff. But right now, Diamond Dynasty actually giving me options that aren't shitty is a nice touch away from these card sports arenas that they have. But that's
I've got the biggest question for you.
What?
Have you played as the woman yet?
No, I have not, because I completely forgot there was until you said something. I don't mean that in any way, because I did make my own character, but I usually never make women in games. A lot of people do. MMOs,
well, any chance I can. I don't think you can make a female character and just play like through a random season.
Yeah, not a random season, but you can do your roles for the show as a woman.
Oh, can you? Because I thought it was just like a like the Derek Jeter thing. I thought there was just like or like the Negro League. I thought there was just like one like
there might be an option for that. But another option to play as a woman is Road to the Show. So I don't usually do women as characters. I always like to do dudes. So I haven't even looked at that, but
yeah, and they when you're the woman, they underhand the ball to you, right?
I don't know, maybe, or they just kind of soft toss it. But either way, I'm not very good at this baseball game, but it still plays pretty well. It's still one of the most consistent and well played sports games that get released every year, because I've really stopped bothering with the other two, and hockey's like here and there. But yeah, it's usually baseball is like the one that's like, all right, yeah, this one I would definitely not be upset if I spent money on, because it's, you know, decent, and you can really, there's a lot of customization, so you don't have to play such a long season, and it usually plays pretty well. So yeah, it's all right. But yeah, that's all I've been playing. Now, a question I have before we move on, if you guys want to watch, we'll talk about TVs, if we want to do anything there. Andrew, did you bring your PS Portal over to Josh's?
Oh, yeah, I did.
How'd that go?
It was okay. Like, there is definitely noticeable more, like, lag compared to when I was playing at home. But it was still, I played a couple levels of a Rayman, and it was playable, but it definitely, you could notice, like, the lag on it, so.
Okay, cool. I'm glad that it's still, like a option for you to do, so that's pretty dope.
Yeah, and then on the sports game thing, my roommate plays a lot of the, I guess a couple years ago, there was a NASCAR game that came out.
Oh, he plays one of those?
And
I fall down Instagram rabbit holes of this dude who just plays online leagues, and it's so fucking absurd.
I would say he more like hates plays it because he loves NASCAR, but that's game is so like, I'm watching it, and I'm like, some of the shit like that's in these like racetracks looks like unfinished. Like it like you see like just part of the map, it like clips in and out and stuff, and just like graphical issues, and but he's like, this is all there is. Like this is what we have to play if we're NASCAR fans. I'm like, man, this sucks. Like there's no
Who makes the game that he's playing?
I don't even remember who makes it. There's no music in the game. It's just straight like
music in the game
as you're driving around, but it's still like bland, like lifeless.
That's depressing.
When was the last EA NASCAR game?
EA one? Oh, it's probably been quite a while since EA made one. But yeah, I'm not sure who makes the one that came out couple years. I guess there's another studio like currently making one. They're hoping to get it out like next year or something.
2009. It was no. I'm sorry. 2008. They released NASCAR 09.
Jesus.
Wow.
But yeah, that's all I've been playing. You guys been watching anything? I know that you guys talked about Yellow Jackets. Josh, you were going to talk about, I believe, was it the Halo series? The end.
Yeah, I finished Season 2 of Halo. I thought there was going to be 9 episodes, because Season 1 had 9 episodes. And so I got on Amazon Prime last night, because I have Paramount Plus for Amazon. And I got on it, and I got on the page for Halo Season 2. I'm like, all right, time to watch the season finale. And there wasn't a new episode. I'm like, wait a minute. I was like, last week was the season finale? It didn't feel like a season finale. And so I went online, I looked, I'm like, well, sure shit, there's only 8 episodes in Season 2. I'm like, all right, well, it was kind of a letdown of a season finale. But I will say, though, they brought the Flood in for the season finale, and I do really think they did it justice. So in the show, very similar to the game, the Flood is a a parasite. The Flood is a parasite that infects you and basically turns you into a kind of like just like a fucking raving zombie that's controlled by what I'm guessing is a grave mind. However, they have not like introduced a grave mind yet in the show, so I'm not sure if they're gonna do that. If they even do a season 3, I don't know if it's been approved yet, if it's been renewed yet for season 3. But in the show, they portray people infected with the Flood as like you kind of like the person starts getting really violent, really like paranoid, and then they kind of just freeze, like they just stand there, like they're just statues, but you can see like their fingers are twitching and stuff, and then when they find out there's a food source around them, they fucking snap to attention and they run at you like a fucking zombie, and then Eventually, they get like these pus-filled sacks on them, like the Flood do in the games, and they have long-ass tendrils that come out and they attack you. So, the way they portrayed the Flood, it was definitely terrifying, and I definitely liked how they did the Flood. So, my biggest complaints for season two is that they killed off two very key characters that in the game universe had big things to do.
Who did they kill?
Okay, so in the middle of season two, I think it was episode 4 or 5, they killed Captain Keyes. When the show was, they hadn't even discovered the Halo yet, but in the games, Captain Keyes and Master Chief and Cortana and everyone else on the Pillar of Autumn, they discover the Halo, and then Captain Keyes is he's instrumental he has a big plot point in the original Halo game.
So you're gonna tell me they killed Johnson.
Johnson isn't even in the show.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now, whether or not he's in there in the season 3, he could be.
If they even do a season 3.
But they kind of merged Johnson's character and Captain Keyes.
They merged Johnson's?
In the show, Captain Keyes, he's a black man. And he kind of, like, he has mannerisms of Captain Keyes from the game, but he also has a lot of mannerisms of Sergeant Johnson from the game as well. So I kind of feel like they took those characters and they merged them into one. So, maybe. And then the other really big one is they killed off the Arbiter.
What? Really?
Yeah, and so they introduced the Arbiter.
Are you sure?
Yes. So they introduced the Arbiter in season 2. So in season 1, the woman that was Master Chief's love interest, her name is McKee. They make you think that she died at the end of season 1, but she comes back in season 2, and it's revealed that the Arbiter recovered her body, and he kind of like helped her like recover from her wounds, and then so she's under the protection of the Arbiter, and the Arbiter it's kind of implied that he knows that the prophets are lying about the true purpose of the Halo, and so McKee, since she's able to activate like these Forerunner artifacts, and she's able to potentially get the Halo, and she knows it's a weapon. So at the end of season 2, they Master Chief does end up crash landing on Halo. McKee and the Arbiter are already there, and they get to like this this tower, and they want to go inside it, and then McKee and Arbiter do, and then Master Chief shows up, and so Arbiter and Chief start fighting, and then Master Chief gets the upper hand. He beats the crap out of Arbiter on the ground. And then he's talking to McKee in his Sinhala language. And he's telling her that that he needs to get a warrior's death. That Master Chief needs to kill him. Otherwise he has no honor if he lets him live. And so McKee goes to tell him that. And Master Chief goes, I got the gist of it. And then he stabs Arbiter to their chest with the energy sword.
He could still be alive with a sick scar.
No, he's dead because they show the life leave Arbiter's eyes, and then he's motionless like that dude's dead.
Okay, the show sucks. Can we just admit that? The show fucking sucks.
Yeah, like, they're definitely like, I don't know, they're taking a lot of really dumbass liberties. And then, so after the Flood starts infecting this, it's on the planet called Onyx, and it's they're in like this research facility, and Miranda Keyes and Dr. Halsey are there. Which, real quick, did you guys know that in the games, Miranda Keyes was Dr. Halsey's daughter?
Really?
Dude, I don't even remember. I'm having trouble even remember who Keyes is, so.
Well, Captain Keyes was the captain of the ship in Halo 1. And then the first Halo. And then Miranda Keyes is the, she's the woman they introduce in the second game. And then she's also in the third game. And her and Johnson die at the end of Halo 3.
Sure.
Well, anyway, I didn't actually, I thought that was something the show did, was that they made Miranda Keyes Dr. Halsey's daughter. But that is actually a fact in the game as well, so which I didn't know. But anyway, Dr. Halsey ends up getting infected with the Flood. And so Miranda Keyes finds out about that. And so she puts Dr. Halsey into a cryogenic freeze, saying, she's like, this will stop the infection until we can figure out what to do. And I'm like, well, she just fucking, she's Mr. Freeze, you know, like he froze his wife.
Yep.
So, but it, I don't know if, like, I'm kind of on the fence on whether or not I even want Amazon or Paramount Plus to do a season 3. So, but if they do, I'll watch it because there are some cool moments in the show that I'm like, yeah, you know, this is definitely a Halo, and for these few fleeting moments, but other than that, there's
cool moments in the game too, so you could just stick with those.
And then it's like this season 2, it did everything in his power to keep Master Chief out of his armor, and it's like you guys don't understand what makes Master Chief Master Chief.
Yeah, he just shows up in a fucking t-shirt and jeans. I need a weapon.
He shows up, he's like, he's got a tap out shirt on. Let's do this.
Yeah. Yep. It's so dumb.
So, you guys been watching anything?
Not really. No, not for Yellow Jackets. I tried watching Succession. Got a few episodes into it, but not really feeling it, so.
Yeah. Alex, how about you?
Alex?
I said I haven't been watching anything.
Oh. Okay.
Yep. All right.
Well, before we go to the news, I wanted to tell Alex about an experience that Andrew and I had.
Okay.
So, Alex, what if I told you that you could take an original Xbox, hook it up to an Ethernet cable, and after some technical magic, you could connect to the original Xbox Live and play Halo 2 again?
That would be sick.
Well, that, sir, is a reality that Andrew and I have experienced.
Yeah. It's fun.
Tell me more.
So, there's a group of developers.
No, you gotta make them sign the NDA first.
Oh, yeah, Alex. So you have to sign something. I sent it to you.
I sent it to your lawyer. Your lawyer didn't contact you?
You might have to tell me who that is. But okay, continue.
Oh, okay.
There's this group of developers. They created this program called Insignia. Now, this program has been out for over a year. And so what this does is, and now they actually got the blessing for Microsoft to do this, because they were pretty much Microsoft.
Oh, did they? Because actually, you didn't tell me that, so I didn't know if...
They got pretty much, Microsoft told them, like, hey, if as long as you're not making money on it, we don't care what the fuck you do. So they made this program called Insignia, and so they took the original, they took the infrastructure for Xbox Live and they rebuilt it, and then they have to go into game by game and they have to set up the servers for games back up. And obviously, when they started the service, everyone was like, "Where's Halo 2?" And they're like, you know, we're gonna get to it, but they said Halo 2 is something that is very difficult because their servers and infrastructure for that game were very unique, and so they're like, it's gonna take us quite a long time to figure it out. And so a couple weeks ago, they indeed got to the point to where they figured it out. And they turned the servers back on for Halo 2, and it's in beta right now, quote unquote beta. but they got it back up and running. And there's a YouTube tutorial that I went through, and there's a way that you can connect your original Xbox back to Xbox Live, and you can create a gamer tag, and then you can get on online, and then you can play Halo 2.
Fuck yeah, man.
Yeah. And so Andrew and I got both of our Xboxes connected. I haven't played any Halo 2 at home as of yet because I need to get a new controller because the controller I have isn't very good. But yeah, at some point I definitely, I'm going to get on and play some at home. And do you have an OG Xbox, Alex?
I don't, but now I might have to find a cheap one because that sounds fucking awesome.
Yeah, and so you obviously you have to have your console hooked up by Ethernet cord. Because the original Xbox did not have Wi-Fi. But, other than that, it's...
I don't know if anyone had Wi-Fi back in 2004.
Not a lot of us.
Yeah.
Other than that, there's a short process you have to go through to get your system connected. There is a... Alex, if and when you ever do get an original Xbox, I can actually save you a bunch of time because you have to get a really old USB stick, and you have to set up some files on it, and then you have to connect it to your Xbox and everything. There's a process to getting the flash drive, like set up and get the files on it. And I have that flash drive, so you can borrow it if you want, sweet. And it'll save you a bunch of time.
Okay. For sure.
But basically what you do is there's this cord, this unique cord that one end plugs into your Xbox like a controller. The other end is a USB port, and then you just plug this USB drive into it, and it makes your Xbox think it's a memory card. And then you just go into the memory card, and it brings up this special screen, and then you register your Xbox with Insignia. And then there's just some DNS stuff with the internet that you set up to make sure you can connect Insignia servers, and then you connect and you create your gamer tag and everything, and then you can just get online.
Fuck yeah. That's that's pretty awesome. How many games did you guys end up playing?
It's one because. It was like 1:30 in the afternoon on a Sunday, so there wasn't that many people on, so it took me like 5 to 10 minutes even to get into a game.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, once more people start doing this, and if it's on like a Saturday night when more people on, it'll probably be easier to get in a game.
Yeah, and right now there's 12,515 registered users for Insignia, but I mean, just last weekend, there's only like 10,000 something. So, I mean, it's definitely climbing. And eventually, I'm sure, I'm sure that it'll be like right now on a Friday night, it says that there's 93 people playing Halo 2 online. But that'll eventually climb, and there'll be a lot more people playing. So. And then if there's like they've added online support for like so many different original Xbox games, most of them are probably never going to have that many people playing. Unfortunately, but I mean, if like for example, if you and a friend wanted to play Gauntlet Seven Sorrows together, like you could hook up your Xboxes to listen Signy and you could play online. So.
Pretty cool. Because the Xbox Live for original Xbox went offline in 2010. So it's been 14 years since people were able to play these games online. So
yeah. When Insignia put up the beta for Halo 2, they put online on Twitter, they just put the tagline, Spartans never die, they're just missing in action.
Fuck yeah.
Nice.
Anything else?
How about we get into what's
news.
That?
Let's talk about some news.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's get in some news here. Been a decent amount to happen in the last couple weeks here, including this article that came from Bloomberg. A new report claims that the PSVR 2 has been getting, the shipments have been getting progressively smaller every quarter since it has it launched, to the point where Sony has stopped production on the headset altogether because they have such a surplus of headsets that nobody's buying. Alex, does that surprise you?
Not even in the slightest.
I wouldn't think so. So yeah, this thing is a... estimates put this thing around... Let me see if it has a full estimate. I don't think it has a full estimate, but adding these numbers together, it seems like it's at about like 1.7 million. Because I see here... Sony says that the PSVR 2 sold 600,000 units during its first 6 weeks of availability. But Bloomberg says that sales declined to 435,000 in Q2 of last year, then 343,000 in Q3, 325,000 in Q4. So if you add that, that's like 1.5 million. They're probably around like 1.7 million that they've sold, which isn't great because there's 50 million PS5s out there. So it means that, like, you know, maybe one and a half out of every 50 people have bought this that has a PS5. So not super great. Do you guys think that this was obviously something that was greenlit years ago, because this doesn't like get R&D'd in a year. So this thing came out last year. I bet this thing was greenlit in like during COVID 2020 probably. And it was probably started, like, someone probably pitched it in like 2019 or something. And I think that this is from like a bygone era of Sony now, because Sony, I mean, you look at Jim Ryan's gone. I don't think that there's going to be a PSVR 3.
No, I don't think so either.
Yeah, it would just be dumb at this point.
What sucks is that I think kind of VR and a console as a concept is just kind of dead in the water now. I mean, maybe even VR for PC as well. I mean, it just doesn't seem there's that much going on in that front.
Yeah, I mean, Oculus, like the Quest, still gets some sales. Like the Quest, Bloomberg says the Quest sold like 2 million units during holiday of last year. So they are selling units. Obviously, you don't need a PC to run a Quest, though, and that's the issue. Because if someone doesn't have a PS5, and then someone shows them a PSVR 2, and they're like, oh man, it looks really cool, how do I get one? When someone says, well, first you need to spend $500 on a PS5, then you can spend $550 on a headset. That's a $1,000 purchase. That's a shit ton of money to get into the PSVR 2. So I think that's what's holding it back. I think Sony flipped the in case of emergency switch to basically say, like, hey, we're going to make this thing available to use on PC. Maybe that saves it. I don't know. But
yeah, and I mean, if they have so many like extra units to sell, I mean, if they want to sell me one for like 200 bones, I'll buy one.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, we'll see. I think that we're gonna start seeing maybe not this year, but I bet next year we're gonna start seeing Sony say that, like, hey, we're not supporting this anymore. Like, they're like, third parties can still make games, but we're not making first party games anymore. But yeah, we'll see. Next story here, Assassin's Creed Jade, which is the next, that's the code name for the Assassin's Creed game that takes place in Japan, supposedly was supposed to release this year. A new report says that this game has been delayed to 2025. That's according to a Reuters source, who claims that Tencent has recently redeployed hundreds of developers who had been working on the free-to-play mobile game as part of a wider... What the fuck are we talking about here? That doesn't even make that sense. Doesn't even make sense when you're talking about Assassin's Creed.
So what is it?
It said that's according to Reuters sources who claim that Tencent has recently redeployed hundreds of developers who had been working on a free-to-play mobile game as part of. What does that even have to do with Assassin's Creed Jade?
I have no idea.
Is okay, so this is not the game I was thinking of. Okay, so this is actually the Assassin's Creed mobile game that was announced. I'm thinking of Assassin's Creed Red, I think it is. Is that the code name of the one that is in Japan?
I think so.
Yeah, okay, so it says here Assassin's Creed Jade is set to be published by Tencent's Level Infinite Division after Ubisoft announced a major strategic partnership with the Chinese company in 2022. Yeah, so I guess this is going to be mobile. Who the fuck cares then? Forgot I even talked about this article. Fuck this.
What article? Right,
so, yeah, so going on from talking about PSVR 2 and not talking about anything else after that, Bethesda offers a small Elder Scrolls 6 update as series celebrates its 30th anniversary. And this comes from, I believe, Todd Howard. Where's the quote here? It says that as part of a larger message released to coincide with the 30th anniversary of the RPG series, the company reiterated that the highly anticipated sequel is in the works, saying, last but not least, yes, we are in development on the next chapter, The Elder Scrolls 6. Even now, returning to Tamriel and playing early builds has us filled with the same joy, excitement, and promise of adventure. This had a lot of clickbait articles coming out saying saying Elder Scrolls 6 is in a playable state.
Yeah,
I completely was like, are you guys fucking stupid? Like, that is not what that means. That just means they have a build to where, like, they're moving, like, characters around in the environment. But it's probably just, like, fucking polygons and stuff they're moving around.
It's probably a fucking stick figure that Bill wrote in
exactly.
The background.
Yeah. Let's see.
It does kind of suck though that it's the 30th anniversary of Elder Scrolls and there wasn't like anything super special. Either.
Yeah, where's that fucking Elder Scrolls 4 remake or that we're supposed to be getting?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. All right, keeping it with Microsoft. Phil Spencer has discussed what he'd like to see in a potential Xbox handheld. This thing's happening, right, guys?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, there's been way too many like kind of like tidbits here and there about this. This is actually happening. So Phil was asked in an interview with Polygon about what he would like to see in a potential interview, and Phil stopped short of confirming that they are making one. But in the interview, he says. He said the Xbox hardware team is considering different hardware form factors and things that they could go do. Saying what should we build that will find new players that will allow people to play at times when they couldn't go play in the past. I like the fact that Valve, Lenovo, and Asus. I've heard a lot of people call it Asus lately, but I always thought it was Asus. Do you guys know?
No, I've heard of both ways as well.
I don't know. I like the fact that Valve, Lenovo, and Asus went out and innovated in a new form factor. And I will say that when I'm playing on those devices, it almost feels more like a console than a PC. 9 out of 10 times. The things that usually frustrate me are more Windows-based, the device-based, which is an area I feel some ownership of. Like, I want to be able to log in with a controller. I've got my list of things we should go do. Regardless of whether Xbox were to launch its own handheld, Spencer said he wanted other handheld systems to feel like an Xbox. saying, forget about the brand. More like, are all my games there? Do all my games show up with the save files that I want? I want to be able to boot into the Xbox app in a full screen, but in a compact mode. And all my social experiences are there. Like, I want to feel like the dash of my Xbox when I turn on the television, except I want it on those devices. So yeah, I think things happening. Will it do any good? Probably not, but it's happening. So, we'll see.
What do you guys think to call it?
No idea.
The...
The X-Boy.
Yeah, they wouldn't do that. I don't know, because Xbox is because it's a box.
X-Hand.
X-Port? I don't know.
Hand me the X.
Yeah. All right, we're going to stick with Xbox because it just kind of puts together. Phil Spencer says he wants other digital storefronts like Epic Game Store, itch.io, itch.io, and Steam on Xbox. So in that same interview with Polygon, Spencer said he'd like to break down the walled gardens that limit players to only buying consoles, console games through that console's official digital store. When asked if this meant he could see a future where other third-party stores like the Epic Game Store or itch.io or Steam end up on Xbox, Spencer said he could, citing the way Microsoft handles Windows as an example. He says, consider our history as the Windows company. Nobody would blink twice if I said, hey, when you're using a PC, you get to decide the type of experience you have by picking where to buy those games. There's real value in that. He went on to explain that the current model of selling consoles at a loss and regaining the money through game sales is becoming less effective because component prices aren't dropping so much over the course of a console's life, while at the same time the console market isn't growing. I'm going to add something here. It's also because you train people to not fucking buy your games.
Yeah.
That's also a big part of it. He says, subsidizing hardware becomes more challenging in today's world. And I will say, and this may seem altruistic, I don't know that it's growing the industry. So I think, what are the barriers? What are the things that create friction in today's world for creators and players? And how can we be a part of opening that up, opening up that model? One solution he believes is enabling more stores to appear on Xbox consoles, giving players more options and potentially creating competitive pricing, saying, if I want to play on a gaming PC, then I feel like I'm more a continuous part of a gaming ecosystem as a whole, as opposed to on console where my gaming is kind of sharded. The weird word to use there, to use a gaming term, based on these different closed ecosystems that I have to play across. This is it's a cool idea he has. I don't know if it would ever work. What do you guys think?
They would really have to figure out the logistics of it, because, like, for example, he says he wants Steam, the Steam store on Xbox. So if you're buying a game on Steam that's also on Xbox, how's the sale of that? How's that cut between? Like, obviously, if you're buying it on the Xbox platform, Microsoft is going to want to cut a lot. But if you're buying it on the Steam store as well, Steam is going to want a cut of it.
Yeah, but will they, though? Because he's saying that he wants this to be like Windows. If I download Steam on Windows and buy a Steam game, Microsoft doesn't get a cut of that. So he's saying that's what he wants. He wants people to download Steam and just buy games through Steam. So it almost seems like he just wants to turn Xbox into a PC that you just hook up to your TV. I don't know. I like what he's saying, but I don't know how this makes money for Microsoft.
I guess my question is, like, for example, let's say Dragon's Dogma 2. If I go on my Xbox and I go, I want to buy a Dragon's Dogma 2. Well, why would Microsoft want the Steam store to be an Xbox? Because they would, if you go on an Xbox, they want you to go, well, if I'm going to buy Dragon's Dogma 2 on an Xbox, then I'm going to buy it through the Microsoft Store. Why would I buy it through Steam if I'm on an Xbox?
I guess if you're just on the Steam app that's on the Xbox, because then if you buy it on Steam, then ideally, if you also have a PC, you can just go there and also play that same game on PC.
Well, you have
it on Steam.
Yeah, I understand that. What I'm saying is, how does this benefit Xbox?
It doesn't, which is, but I don't know. I think Phil might be past that point of, I only have to do stuff that benefits Xbox here, because they're dying.
Yeah.
So I think he might just be looking and go, I want people to buy an Xbox. Even if it's just to play PC games, and maybe they work it out and they do get a cut of it. I don't know. But I think this is dumb though, because on an Xbox, unless they open it up, you can't really edit your settings of a game. Not like you can on PC. So if you're playing Steam games on an Xbox, you can't go in and change your, you know, all the settings that you can on a PC. So it just doesn't super make sense to me.
I kind of feel like if you're buying a game on Xbox, playing on Xbox, you're buying the Xbox version, but you'd just be buying it through Steam.
Yeah, but there's games on Steam that aren't on Xbox. Because everyone's looking at this and going, this is how we get PlayStation games on Xbox, is you just buy them through Steam and you play them on your Xbox.
But, like, to me, like, I don't see Phil Spector going, I want the Steam store on Xbox to where you can play any game on Steam on your Xbox. I don't think he's saying that. Because I'm sure there's a lot of games, older and new, that just aren't optimized to run an Xbox.
Yeah.
So, like, that would be a massive headache, and I don't see why Steam would want people to go through that. It'd be a massive headache.
Yeah, they don't, which is why it's never going to happen. But interesting that Phil wants it. All right, so we just had the Time Splitters game canceled, and also the studio closed, Free Radical. And this is coming from the head of the studio, which his name is... Where the fuck is his name? It's the co-founder. In an interview with GamesIndustry.biz about the reforming and eventual shutdown of Free Radical, co-founder Steve Ellis, who also worked on the original Time Splitters games, said the experience has likely ended any chance of him working on another series in the entry in the series again, saying, it's probably the end of me being involved with Time Splitters. I don't know if PlayOn or Embracer will do anything with it. I don't know what it would take to get me to want to go through all that again. It was a big letdown. Ellis added that he's potentially working on something else, confessing that he had Unity in front of him as he was giving the interview, saying, I did have an idea that I would do something that wasn't games, but I always end up gravitating back. It's what I've done for nearly 30 years. But yeah, it's just another thing of like, Time Splitters isn't happening. Funny thing I saw on Facebook. Do you remember seeing stuff, Josh, about it was like a Time Splitters like remake that this team had been doing? It was like freelance work this team had been doing. They've been doing it for like the last 12 fucking years.
Yeah, it's very similar to like the Skywind and Sky Oblivion remakes that some teams are working on. It's these passion projects that these, you know, like these groups of freelance developers do, but they're doing it on their own time. They're not getting paid for it, and like understandably, they all have their own jobs, and so it makes the projects take a long time.
Yeah, well, the Facebook group, after having no updates in over a year, just restarted again, and the group said that they're looking to hire more developers for the project. So since it seems like since this got shut down, is they're ramping that up again. So because it seemed like they kind of stopped whenever this new game was announced by Embracer.
Well, I mean, after seeing what Embracer is doing, like, I'm not upset I got shut down.
Oh, no. I'm not either. There's actually a story that I didn't include of the Embracer CEO saying, it's too early to start buying studios again. It's like, dude, you're still in the process of killing studios. Like, shut up about buying more. Like, it's, oh, it's like a really weird thing to say right now. Yeah. Alex, are you upset there's no more Time Splitters?
Yeah, I like Time Splitters. Was hoping to get more. But this just seems to be the fate of games nowadays.
Yeah, do you think, though, because I've often thought about this, it's been a long time since I played Time Splitters, mm-hmm. and they're fun back in the day, but do you think it's just nostalgia that we remember that we like them, but if you played that game today, it just wouldn't hold up?
Probably, to be honest, probably. I haven't played a Time Splitters game in a while.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's entirely a possibility, you know?
Mm-hmm. Let's see. BioShock's Ken Levine revealed more details on his narrative Lego game, which is what this game is being called, Judas. A bunch of people were flown out to somewhere, including Ryan McCaffrey, Jeff Keighley. Did Maddie go out there? I don't remember if I saw him say he did or not. Anyway, a bunch of people got a 6-hour preview of the game. And IGN's report calls the game a first-person narrative-driven shooter that, from a moment-to-moment gameplay perspective, will feel familiar to BioShock fans. So the protagonist is the titular Judas, a formerly dead but now reprinted woman aboard a city-sized spaceship called the Mayflower. The ship is transporting the last survivors of the human race from Earth to a new planet called Promia Centauri. Judas has interactions with the ship's three leaders, Tom, Nefertiti, and Hope, and the player has to decide which one to help, because making one leader happy may upset another one, in a structure Levine calls a narrative Legos. Keighley posted his first impressions on X, saying the game still feels like a BioShock game to some extent. All the things you'd expect in a BioShock game are there. There are hand powers, there's hacking, there's incredible cinematic moments, great characters, rich storylines, but there's something more going on behind the scenes, and this is something that's really hard to describe or showcase in a trailer. Keighley also notes that the game is not done by any means, suggesting it may still be some time before it releases, which is not surprising, because sources have said that this don't expect this before fall of, like, 2025, at the earliest. But yeah, that's still cool, though. Again, Alex, I've been seeing a lot of people on X ever since these previews came out, and people are saying, like, oh, this is like BioShock. Seeing a lot of people go, that's it? Just BioShock? And just I'm like, BioShock. What are you talking about? How are you, like, just another BioShock game? Like, what the fuck do you want?
Another BioShock game. Weird.
Exactly. I don't understand these people. Like, this narrative that BioShock, for this narrative for some people that BioShock isn't good. It's like, are you fucking insane? I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't understand any of it either, man.
Yeah.
That's like if From Software does an Elden Ring 2. And people will play it and they're like, it's more Elden Ring, and people are like, that's it.
Yeah, it's stupid. I'm all for another BioShock Net game. All right, we're almost done here. Images of a all-digital Xbox Series X console have reportedly leaked. I mean, I sent you guys these pictures. It's a white Series X. It's all digital.
The first console you mentioned is only viable to a really niche audience.
Yep. There's a 2 terabyte hard drive in it, and then it has a it has a better heat sink in it, which that's the only difference this console has over the original Series X. If this is all Xbox has to release this year, they're fucked. I mean, they're already fucked, but they're even more fucked if this is all they have to release, because Sony has the PS5 Pro coming, which, oh yeah, by the way, a new report came out today from Tom Henderson, giving more details on the PS5 Pro. Just finding it right here. Where are you? So this is a memo that was sent out to developers. It says, with the soon-to-be-announced PS5 Pro expected to hit shelves later this year, Insider Gaming has learned of the developer requirements that need to be met to have the PS5 Pro Enhanced label attached to their game. Internally, this is currently called the Trinity Enhanced label, because the PS5 Pro codename is Trinity, but for the sake of SEO, we will be referring to it as PS5 Pro Enhanced moving forward. The Enhanced label first made its introduction into the PlayStation ecosystem following the release of the PS4 Pro, which meant that the game utilized the Pro console's improved hardware to offer improved frame rates and resolutions. For the PS5 Pro, PlayStation wants games to offer a PS5 Pro exclusive graphics mode that will combine PSSR to upscale resolution of 4K. That is their solution to DLSS, a constant 60 frames a second, add or increase ray tracing effects. According to documents sent to Insider Gaming, this is possible because of faster RAM, which is 28% faster, and a faster GPU that is 67% larger than the standard console. And they're saying that all together, that the PS5 Pro with those two things together is 45% faster than the PS5. PlayStation goes on to continue that games may also be given the PS5 Pro Enhanced label if they offer any of the following enhancements: increased target resolution for titles that run a fixed resolution on the standard console, increased target maximum resolution for titles that run at variable resolution on a standard console, increased target frame rates for titles that target a fixed frame rate on a standard console, inclusion of PS5 Pro ray tracing effects. This is definitely happening this year. Are you guys gonna buy one? If possible. Josh. Well, you have a kid. You have a kid on the way. That's a no. You're not getting one of these.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to get a better PS5, yeah. But you know, priorities.
Yeah, you can play mine. And by play, you can watch me play games on mine.
Okay.
All right, let's talk about the Overwatch 3 that was Marvel Rivals that was announced just a few days ago. Because this is just fucking Overwatch with Marvel's DLC put on top of it. That's all this fucking is. Did you watch the video for this, Josh?
No, because I read kind of a synopsis. It's synopsis, but I didn't watch the trailer.
Yeah, Alex, what do you think of it?
Oh, I like it. I'm very interested, even though it's free to play, so I'm totally going to check it out.
Is it free to play? I didn't remember seeing if it wasn't. So. Okay, yeah, that's good. But yeah, I'm just watching this, and this is... I asked all my friends on Discord, because they all watched it, and not a single one of them was like, this looks cool. Everyone was like, this is just fucking Overwatch. Which is so weird to me that NetEase is making an Overwatch game when Overwatch is such in the... Maybe they're like, hey, Overwatch is falling off so bad that people liked it at one time, so if we make another game like that that's good, people will play it. I don't know. Maybe. This just screams to me of... To put into another terms, a quarterback in the NFL who went out and won a bunch of games in the past, but for the past two seasons has been playing like shit, and the team goes, he used to be good, let's sign him and see if we can get him to play good again. And it never works out. Except in Peyton Manning's case. but yeah, I'm... Maybe when it comes out and I see more, maybe I'll be interested. But as of right now, I'm not interested in this game. And then the last story, not super surprising because we heard that this was something like this was going to happen, is Take-Two has acquired, should I say reacquired? Didn't Take-Two own them before Embracer bought them?
No, Gearbox was independent before Embracer bought them.
Okay. So Take-Two is acquiring Gearbox from Embracer for $460 million. So to quote here, as a significant long-term Embracer Group shareholder, this is coming from, sorry, who's saying this? This is coming from Randy Pitchford. Saying, as a significant long-term Embracer Group shareholder, I believe in the strategy for the Embracer Group going forward. No, you don't. Going forward, and I'm completely convinced that this transaction is the best possible scenario and an obvious net positive arrangement for Embracer Group, for Take-Two, and, of course, for Gearbox Entertainment. My primary interest is always Gearbox, especially our talent and our customers. I want to personally assure fans of our games that this arrangement will ensure that the experiences we have in development at Gearbox will be the best that they can possibly be. The deal will see Take-Two gain the rights to the Borderlands and Tiny Tina's Wonderlands franchises, as well as Homeworld, Risk of Rain, Brothers in Arms, and Duke Nukem. Studios included in the deal are Gearbox Software, Gearbox Montreal, and Gearbox Quebec. Reuters first reported back in September that Embracer was considering selling off Gearbox. Wasn't it only like 2 years ago that they even acquired them?
Yeah, it was something like that.
Yeah. They don't actually say here. There are some IPs that Embracer is actually keeping Gearbox owned. It doesn't actually, none of them are like really substantial, so it doesn't say in this article what they are. Josh, is this a good thing? You like Borderlands?
I do think it's a good thing to make sure that Gearbox is, you know, thriving. The thing that I am concerned about is Take-Two games, or games that are published by Take-Two, they tend to be very microtransaction full, and that's something that, you know, a lot of people expected Borderlands 3 to have just a ton of microtransactions that came out, and it didn't, and neither did Tiny Tina's Wonderlands. And a lot of people were like, well, maybe it's because, you know, Take-Two or 2K was only publishing the games. But now that they're owned by Take-Two, I am worried that they're going to demand that the microtransactions.
Maybe, because they've always been a publisher of every Borderlands game, even before Embracer.
Yeah, but now they own them, and so... That is one concern that I have. I also don't know why everyone's acting so surprised, like, they said that they're working on the next Borderlands game, like, no shit.
Yeah. I mean, I was just about to say that they also announced that everyone's saying Borderlands 4, but they did not actually use that verbiage. They said the next game in the Borderlands franchise. I suppose that could be a Tiny Tina's. Well, I don't think it would be a next game in the Tiny Tina franchise, because they actually do split the IP. That apparently they actually considered those different IPs, the Tiny Tina franchise and the Borderlands franchise now. Alex, are you excited for another Borderlands?
Sure. It'll probably be okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't the biggest fan of 3, but I think it had some
good stuff. Neither was I.
But
the shooting was very, very good.
We'll get to it later this year whenever we talk about anniversaries, but later this year is going to be the 15th anniversary of the first Borderlands game. So,
yeah. That is insane.
Yep.
Yep. All right. Well, that's it for the news, guys. That's all I got.
All right. Anything else, boys?
I'm saying, unless there's anything breaking, Eddie Gordo joins Tekken 8 next week.
All right.
So, yeah. More, more Eddie. What's that joke about Eddie Gordo?
It was a Dane Cook joke.
Is there? Okay.
Yeah, it's something about is when he got joking about getting hit by a car, and he's like, I went flipping like Eddie Gordo from Tekken.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. That's what I remember it from. Xbox is reportedly developing a native PS5 version of Minecraft.
Oh.
So There's that.
All right. Anything else, guys?
Yep. Nope, that is it for me.
Got to end on a dad joke.
All right, yes. Let's hear it.
Dad joke.
All right. Guys, I just found out I'm colorblind. The diagnosis came completely out of the purple.
All right, that one's kind of funny.
All right. Anything else, boys?
Nope, that is it.
All right, if anything else, I will talk to y'all later.
All right, later.
Later. Yeah.